Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
the history of the atom. I wanted to give a basic history of the atom because I was going to discuss molecular orbitals, and as I wrote it out, I wanted to try and start eventually writing scripts for these podcasts and make them a bit more readable and understandable. As wrote it out, I realised that I had to really cover the basic history of the atom, and really, as a molecular physicist, I really had no idea of the deep philosophy that I was able to study a bit later on. Now, you can hear that I'm possibly walking, and you'll hear this, get this podcast probably a week after I publish it, partly because I'm doing it from Melbourne. I live up around Sydney, and the computer I've taken down to Melbourne is as dead as a dodo, so I'll just have to podcast, and as usual, I have to walk, and I'll be going to a local gym to do a few hours exercise, rehab, and that type of stuff. So let's get on to the atom. Lots of people have learnt about what an atom is, what an atom looks like, and perhaps the atom that you draw is the very atom which I think is extremely stupid. It's the Bohr atom. It's that little group of grapes in the centre and these electrons whizzing around. Well, this could be nothing more stupid than that. So if you do that, call yourself stupid. If your kid does it, call them stupid as well. So let's start off with it. I don't know if you want to make a bet. You'll hear what three versions of the atom there were in antiquity, and you can have a bet which one comes out. And you should write it down, have an office sweep if you're there. Now, the sort of first view of what is stuff made of, and obviously you would have heard people didn't think atoms and people did think atoms, but really it was actually three things. Something called monad, and this is by Pythagoras, and it's a profound thing. And he, in the sand, drew a circle with a dot in it, which looks rather like an atom, but he called it a monad. And he said it's sort of like a number, but it's also knowledge. So monad is the basic aspect of existence, and from this we add up, come God. Now, Pythagoras was running a mathematical cult, sort of fusing mathematics and religion together for the first time. So it was this weird ass. Now, monadism is carried right through, and considering trying to work out what it means and the meaning of God and all that type of stuff and numbers has led to Leibniz, which leads to digital algebra, which led to modern computing. So it is a weird idea. But put that down there, so that matter is numbers. Weird. And then you've got the thing of fundamental essence. So whatever it is, you might have the essence of chocolate. And if I get a knife and I cut some chocolate in half, eat half, put it away, and for the next day I cut it again, eat half and putting away, I'll keep on cutting, and with a smaller and smaller knife, never ever run out. That's so you can cut forever. And so you 100 years hence, I've got a very small knife cutting. 300 years hence, I'm still cutting. Each day I'm cutting in half, getting ever and ever smaller. So there's no limit to how small things can be. And pay attention to that, a limit on how small things can be. And on the other things, other people who are saying you can't cut. And the Greek for can't cut, Greek for cutting is tome, a microtome, tomography, a tomahawk. I don't know whether tomahawk is from the Greek, it probably must be an Indian word, but Yeah, throw that in as well for cutting. A meant antisocial, asexual, a tomographic. So atom means I can't cut. And that was Democritus, and he had an idea. There's Epicurus, who actually had an idea, which has sort of got into Star Wars a little bit, that we're all made out of little particles that work together. That led into modern cell theory, which sort of lifted away from it. So this is the idea that trying to work out a sort of variation. If they're all separate parts, how do they work together and for life forms? So they're moving a little way by thinking through. So this is with no idea about atoms. Now, let's go into what actually does happen. So I can cut down my chocolate until I get to the last g'day. Right? The last g'day. The last atom of chocolate. I'm going to be at the gym in no time at this rate. I think this is right. I can't be. So the gym's actually only it's actually shorter from where I live. So well, I get to my last atom of chocolate, for instance, drum roll, and it's the last atom. And we're going to go, is the knife going to hit the side left or right? And surprise is, even though you're told that atoms are unbreakable, they're uncuttable, they are indeed cuttable. And once they're cut up, they're no longer the atom, there's the electron and the ion. But here's the deal. The when you cut it, you get twice as much volume. In fact, the electron coming off is actually bigger than the atom. And so it goes. And it's not that you can't keep on breaking it into fundamental particles. The fundamental particles get are bigger. So it's not that you can't cut it. You can cut it, except cutting it as we understand it doesn't happen. Something different happens. Now this doesn't get told to you at school, simply because your teachers haven't studied quantum physics, haven't looked at Schrodinger's wave equation, hasn't looked at the size equals 1m. But when you get that electron off, can you cut the electron in two? G'day. Hello. The answer is no, you can't cut it in two, because that would have two parts. So truly, electron is what they mean by an atom. And if you could say surprise atom, you could add rather than atom. You can cut an atom and you get parts. And so basically, if I cut a person in two, I get persons in parts. Okay, and they're not the same thing either. They're different. Yeah, there's a heart here and the rest of the body over here. So they're parts of it, and I've cut it. It's just that normally, if I cut a person in two, if I've got a coffin and I cut them in two, I should expect them to fit into small coffins. But when you get down to the atom, something else starts happening. And when you get fundamental particles, particles actually get bigger. And so there are fundamental particles, and the fundamental particles of an atom are electrons, okay, and quarks, okay, leptons and baryons. Is that baryons? Yeah, baryons. So the quarks come together to make neutrons and protons, okay. And in theory, you can cut a... So I'm just doing a podcast, just for the brain stuff as they're going. Yeah, so as weird as they come. Well, I suppose, at least I know I'm weird. Yeah, that's good. Okay. Yeah. So that was a good old smile. I suppose you can hear I'm crossing it. There I'm almost at the gym. So a quark. Three quarks in a quarks in a or quark, I suppose. Depends if you take the original word quark. Three quarks in a neutron and in a proton, and the two come together. So the three come together. Now, but if you could get those individual particles, those individual quarks are bigger than the neutron and a proton, sort of by definition, except they fall in a potential. They've got no unstable state. They have got no free state, which they can go into. But if they did have a free state, that'd all go. Okay, I'm going to have to stop that at the moment as I go into the gym, and that's 10 minutes walking here. So I'm back podcasting again, just only a few seconds after the last one. Fortunately, it's going to be a second one. What a wally. I went in there without my headphones. And if you're sensible, you know you need your headphones. If you're doing cognitive training on treadmills, you need to be able to hear, you know, the instructions. You know, press this now, beep, beep, like that is all. Be complete waste if you can't do it. Okay, we're talking about atoms, and she was just talk about brain dump, completely going ahead. You've got this surprising thing that when you've got an atom and you cut it, the actual big bits are bigger than the whole. So it's not that you can't cut it; you can cut it. It should be surprise cut, but there are actual particles which you can't cut. And that's because they're fundamental. They don't have parts. So there's a whole lot of weird things with them. If they're really fundamental, you can pick them up, but you can rotate around them, but there's no thing to... It's impossible to rotate them. That's a hard thing to... to get your head around. They can be, say, in a fixed body rotating, but you can't spin them, which is rather unusual, because you talk about the spin of electrons and stuff like that. So an electron is really fundamental, and you can't cut it. You can, if it wants to separate into two bits, there's a way of doing it, making it a... I don't know, the Victorians think podcasting into a microphone is unusual. There's people waving at me and all this sort of crap. I don't quite understand what it is. If you can't... you can get an electron which is cut dead in the centre, but it's got to want to do it. You've got to actually do it. And even then, there's no part of the electron. It's a fundamental particle. So it's one of these hard things to get your mind around about. Now, there are people who... I won't go into I'll have a bit of criticism of the Copenhagen school and the Bohr school of thought, which is a complete joke. Let's call it Niels Bohr and the Copenhagen school. It's a complete joke. Now, this is, you can hear the birds... around. This is... Oh no, they're parrots. Normally they're pest birds making that much noise. There is a school of thought that the electron is actually a cloud of my old answer. So it's sort of like... I don't know. It's in a Monty Python skit where they're, I think it's the Holy Grail, where they're killing a witch or a witch, and clearly not a witch, but they grab anything, any idea, and just throw it at it to make it okay. So rather than the electron wave function being a shape in space of the big glob of electron, they say, no, really, it's actually a whole lot of my original answers, but it's actually peppered in like that. It's sort of I can't describe that. They're saying that they're really, my old view of incy wincy lower mass, well, basically quantum mechanics, I'm going to ignore everything that quantum mechanics says, and then when I don't understand it, I'm going to say it's mysterious and spooky. So if I have an electron, which is a blob, I'll say, well, really, it's not a blob. It's what I want it to be. These tiny little me things making up, it spread in space, and it disappears and reappears in time. It's like, I don't know. I'll just try and give it to you in terms of, say you are given the model of a Pokemon. It's like, I think it's something small, electric, Pikachu, Pokemon, Pikachu, little Pikachu, and you actually go into the anime world and actually see a real Pokemon. G'day. And it's huge. It's three stories tall, and you go, my God, that is huge. And you go back and you go back to them and you say, look, I've found a Pokemon. It's like this little one I've imagined, but much bigger. And they say, well, no, it's impossible to be bigger because we've measured the mass of that Pokemon. It only weighs the weight of your little one. So what it must be is that little one hopping around space really quickly, filling up that huge volume, just disappearing in space. So it does it quickly enough so it looks as though it's bigger. It just does it in a way it looks like, and it's because it's your little Pokemon's got all the your little Pikachu's got all the charge. That, I mean, how ridiculous is that? And you'd have to have a ridiculous person like Niels Bohr, who unashamedly knows not his own stupidity. He's really sort of like Johnny English, sort of. Someone who really is completely unaware and just making these completely ridiculous ideas and, standing up, waiting, announcing it, waiting for a pause. A lot of people say, rubbish, throw it out. And then that's what the real scientist did. But he sort of hung along long enough to get applause and to get into the school textbooks. And so he, therefore you got this enormous thing that you could cut the mini little Pokemon, but he's got this view of the mini Pokemon. And there's no evidence whatsoever of this mini Pokemon, the handheld purse-sized Pokemon. That's actually only the very large scale one which works in it. So you've got this unusual stuff. Now when it comes down to fundamental, there are fundamental particles and you cannot cut them because they cannot be in two separate bits. So I can't cut an electron in half and have half a charge over here and half a charge over here. I can't get a say, would you like some electron on your pasta, and go up and start to grate some Parmesan cheese, but it's an electron. I can't grate a little bit of electron. It's a fundamental particle. A fundamental particle. It's wired into the universe. Well, the way it's wired into the universe is the way the universe has settled down, and the way it's wired in determines the way that we experience the universe. So it's wired in sort of a crazy way that the electron, if you could mark it, if you could put a mark, bear in mind you cannot put a scratch on an electron. If I've got an electron, there is no way that I can walk around, walk around it and see the mark again. But if you could, you'd walk around it and come back, and its positive bits will turn to negative, That's negative to positive. Now, this is it in terms of as we experience existence, it either exists or it doesn't. But the electron, when you get down to it, to unpack the maths of it, has positive existence and negative existence. It is a wave, a fluctuation of an electric field, in electric field space, and mass space, and all that. It's a fluctuation, and that the square of that fluctuation is what we can experience, but in its world, it's positive and negative experience. It can actually interfere with itself and other things. In fact, I can make an electron centimeter long, that wiggle it, and play it like an instrument. And I'm not joking. That's what they do in cyclotrons. They get an electron. As it speeds up in light, it gets thinner and thinner and thinner, longer and longer and longer, and then they wiggle it, and that one electron can actually laze off itself. There you go. You might say, I'm stupid. But if you're feeling that I'm stupid, now you know how I feel about Niels Bohr, who is unrelentingly, unswervingly stupid. So once you get to know the electrons, they're much more interesting than a little sphere or something like that which can pop in. They've got shape and phases and energies, and you can do heaps of things. You can tie them, you can tie them in a knot and tie two atoms, nuclei, together, which is important. And so in order to say what a molecule is, which is my next episode, you have to say what an atom is. And the problem is that when I say it's an atom, everyone has sat dutifully in school and said, an atom is what Mr. Niels Bohr said. And my teacher says, here it is. Sure, I can draw a little cut. It happens to be just like a kiddie cartoon. Hooray. Okay, now if I don't get that, take it out of your book and just rip it out of your book and said, rubbish, you don't know anything. If I just say, oh yeah, you are sort of left with the feeling security, I don't know what this man is saying. How come he is talking about large electrons? How come he is saying that I can see electrons if I look inside a metal? Oh, look, I should say something which I should be able to do. I've got to get in. I should be here. I feel that I'm missing where... It must be going the opposite way. I'm just going... All right. I should have to talk about the weirdness of quantum mechanics and the symmetries and the stuff like that. Like, if the moment you say poo-poo, you then stop telling kids some really fascinating stuff, and with you stop them telling fascinating stuff, they no longer, they can actually miss out on what is an atom. It's quite an amazing thing. So now I'm actually walked from the gym back home, and I'll have to stop this again. And we'll take it from there. Hopefully I'll go and reach the gym soon. Okay, back again. Three-part episode. First part, going to the gym. Going to the gym, realising you don't have the equipment. Part two, going from the gym back home. Part three, g'day. Hi. Okay, I'll just stop this for a moment. Okay, we're up again. I just met some people looking after my mum's place. So while my mum's in hospital, I'm staying at her place. How's about that? Something, it's vacant there. Okay, so we're here, and we've got this problem that not only have the children been taught incorrectly, can I just basically say, if a child... or you, for instance, draw an electron smaller than the nucleus, you have committed a crime against quantum physics. You are a criminal. But the tables are turned. What we have is people being taught this at school, and then they're taught to belittle people who talk of quantum physics, and then it's an uphill. It's an uphill thing. Now it's sort of like I don't know. Your grandma's been listening to the radio. They bring out a new road law, and she says, "Oh, you got to give way, blah blah blah." Now, and you go, "Oh, look, that's absolute rubbish." It's a bit different from a policeman going, "See your record. Have you seen the latest thing?" No excuse. So ignorance of the quantum law is no excuse, if I can put it as boldly as that. I'm just having a bit of fun at the moment. I'm really not this obnoxious. I'm always... I suppose one of the things I want to do is cover with scientists is that scientists know enough science to restrict their comments to an area of their expertise and have all private reservations at Wally's. And they know that if they put a scientific view into a social situation, it'll get completely mangled. So you save yourself up to be an expert, be called as an expert witness, to be cross-examined, and that's when you speak. And the rest of the time, you shut up. And so this is a bit of a problem when it comes to education. Your scientists are trained to shut up because it's part of their professional candor to make sure that I at least have no misconceptions, and my colleagues, I will write a letter to them informing them of a misconception. That's the way to do it, particularly say if someone is going to spend $1 million on a stupid idea, rather than saying, "Oh, I hope they do that," and we'll find that, you write a letter saying, "Look, scientific candor, under the scientific candor, I'm just saying these equations, have you considered?" And then you might write back. So these are all the private correspondences. You don't hear scientist to scientist. And and then it might come out in a journal. And you might have a paper war. Not really. So the scientific journalists, because generally journalists haven't been scientists, they don't know this. But this means that when it comes to education, we sort of tend to live and let live. At what point do you come out and say, transmutation, there's a problem with that. Miracles, there's a problem with entropy, conservation of mass, energy, all physical laws of the universe. So there's many things to be quiet about, with good reason. You don't want to be burnt. And your ideas are definitely a work in progress. So it's not saying my house is better than yours, especially when you've got scaffolding all over your house and you basically want to interact with expertise, and it slowly is a bigger and better house. But in the meantime, you get across. This, of course, is asymmetric in terms of the teachers and parents. They're, "You're an idiot. I'm an idiot. I'm not an idiot. I'm not an idiot because I can actually point out who I think actually are idiots." Like, yeah, this is the proof that you're not an idiot, that you can actually point to someone who you think is an idiot. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. So we have this theme that I can make electrons change shape, and I can actually make them grow in size. Yes, so I can slow an electron down, and it'll be too big to get through a grid. So you can actually pull out sort of environmental electrons from just electrons floating around the place. Just by, a fairly loose grid there, that'll be just too big to get through it. You can actually sieve electrons. And furthermore, you can actually grow an atom. So as you freeze an atom towards absolute zero, increases in size. Now, increases in size, there's not more of it. It increases in size. It gets thinner. Well, yeah, I suppose thinner might be the word, more opaque. But using quantum mechanics, okay, you have to use quantum mechanics. If you select an atom which is a boson, which has Bose-Einstein statistics, you can basically, say if you've got a very faint slide, it's just very, very faintly visible, you can actually imagine hundreds of the old acid slides, hundreds of across, and you could barely, hello again, barely make it out. Oh, Leo Beck Center, I think that must be used to be a very Jewish quarter. Oh, yeah, the Leo Beck. I think it's a synagogue or something like that. There's people giving me a bit of a weird stare. It is fortified, and a lot of the synagogues, etc., like that are fortified. I can't talk about it. So, in fact, you can actually freeze an atom, and then add atoms on top of it. So the atoms can actually slide through each side thing in space. They're statistically indistinguishable. So you can see a atom and build it up, and you can launch waves about it or get it to as a wave bounce off a surface and see the ripples of it. In fact, you can actually get it to laze and shoot out, light, but shoot out atoms. You can make a matter laser. These are all things you can do. So I can actually show you an atom under a microscope by freezing it down to absolute zero and shining light on it and see the ripples in it. So an atom without without anything going on, it is just a grey blob. Not much. There's not much that we as humans associate with a thing. So we associate features with the thing. Now, an atom, unfortunately, as I get into it, it's not unfortunate. It's part of being made out of fundamental particles. In fact, the way that you can make an atom, when an atom adds up with its weird particles, as the weirdness cancels out, becomes itself a fundamental particle, helium. And so if you can get helium, you can actually, or cesium, or any of these things, you can build them up, and that you can interfere them. Now, this is, I suppose, the complexity of whether you consider light as a particle or a wave. And unfortunately, lights are very much in the wave basket. And the way that people trick themselves into thinking it's a particle is very much with wave-like detectors, which give, far out, individual things. So, there you have it in terms of that. Ultimately, you got your three bets. Was it mathematical? Is it cuttable? Or is it uncuttable? Well, it's cuttable. It's one step before being uncuttable. And that one step before being uncuttable is It's of mathematical origin. You see all these people in Melbourne, very rarely see people talking around with a microphone doing it. I'm back at the gym. So as a As a quantum physicist, and you, by definition, to practice science, if you, Richard Dawkins can go out because he's made a niche for himself, but a general scientist can't go up to a poor grandma or someone like that, or grandpa who makes a stupid statement, and just lay into him. That's just not fair. Okay, I'm going to have to stop at this point in time. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.